Separated by a continent, Liam DeCosmo and Tim Page were just ordinary friends.
That's the actual intro to that.
That's how
that particular.
It's actually me just making that noise.
Until one day,
this will go on for a while.
A question was asked that would change their lives forever.
Dude, have you even seen Star Wars?
No. Why?
What's the matter with you?
From the team that brought you Honor Bright and the awesome podcast comes a story about disbelief, heartbreak, and redemption. This is I Can't Believe You Haven't Seen That.
What's up, all you cinephiles out there? Welcome to I Can't Believe You Haven't Seen That, the show where my best friend and I question our friendship when we discover the must-see movies that we've never seen. My name is Tim Page, and I'm here with a man who once scissor-kicked one of his best friends in the face, Liam DeCosmo. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, man? You know what? I still say he deserved that. So
I still say he deserved it, too.
You know what? You don't get down low. I understand you're rocking out on the guitar, but don't get down low when you know your idiot lead singer is prone to jumping like a freaking moron. So, you know what? He got what he deserved. That's all
yeah,
I
can
say.
Yeah. It was this was on stage at a show, and he was just like right behind him, and the kick happened, and that's what happens, you know? That's what happens when you want to be a rock star. On this episode of I Can't Believe You Haven't Seen That, we are going to be discussing some killer movies that I hope that you've seen. We're going to talk about Dirty Dancing and Close Encounters of the Third Kind, so get stoked for that. But before we get into today's show, we want to take a minute to give a shout out to our sponsor, freaking Fandango. Woo-hoo! What do you think about Fandango, Liam?
Yeah, dude, I love Fandango, and it's awesome because it's one of those things you can use so easily. Like, it's not an application or a website or anything that is difficult to kind of maneuver. You know, it's just one of those, like, click, 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 you're done. It's awesome.
Yeah, I love it. Probably, if you're listening to the show, you probably already are a Fandango fan. But if you're not, here's the deal. Basically makes it super simple to find theaters near you, see what's playing, find out movie times, buy your tickets, and skip past the lines. I love that. And I love their iPhone app. It's sick. Like, Yeah, you know, I'm one of these people, you know, I never remember to do anything ahead of time. So it's usually like I'm out with the wife. Then we're like, oh, let's go see a movie. So we go to the theater, and I didn't check times. I don't know anything. So what we'll do is we'll get to the mall. You know, we'll grab some dinner or whatever, and then I can just watch trailers with her on the Fandango site. We can buy the tickets right from there, and then we don't have to wait in line. We just finish our dinner and then leisurely stroll in. Which I'm a fan of. So right now, they've got a nice promotion. You can get 20% off when you buy $25 or more in gift cards if you use your Visa signature card. So go to ICan'tBelieveYouHaven'tSeenThat.com/tickets. Again, that's ICan'tBelieveYouHaven'tSeenThat.com/tickets. You can get a good deal, save a buttload of hassle, and support our ridiculous podcast. Cool?
Sounds cool to me.
I love it. All right, let's get into some trivia. So we did some trivia the last show, and the question was, Broken Lizard, the comedy team behind Super Troopers, also made a fair amount of other ridiculous movies. Which of the following was not one of them? So the answer choices were Club Dread, Beer Fest, Senior Trip, or Freeloaders. And the answer is, drum roll please, Senior Trip. Yeah, I don't
nice.
Know. I don't even know who did that.
See, and that the funny thing is, like, with Beer Fest, I've seen parts of it because, you know, it's one of those movies they pop up on Comedy Central every now and again. So, you know, I've seen pieces of it, but it still wasn't one of those ones I was like, man, I'm going to sit down and watch this whole thing. And I want to say Club Dread for me is the same way. So I think with both of those, I was pretty sure that those were Broken Lizard, but I've never seen Freeloaders and I've never seen Senior Trip. So for me, both of those, I would have been like, I don't know, either one of those, I guess.
I might have even made up Senior Trip. I don't know.
You made it up.
I might have. I don't know. Freeloaders is, I haven't seen it. That's the only one of the three that are actually Broken Lizard that I haven't seen. Club Dread is awesome. Beer Fest wasn't my favorite, but decent movie. I mean, it's one of those, probably if you're drunk, it's probably good.
That, or I feel like if you're really into beer. You know what I mean? I feel like if you're one of those people that not really like a beer connoisseur, but you just love drinking beer, like maybe then it kind of seems more interesting to you. But I mean, you and I are not, we've never really been the whole, let's go to the pub and get smashed.
Yeah.
Get smashed.
It's like, the, It's the non-Irish part of us somehow.
I guess. But you know me. I'm more of a whiskey Guinness fan
that makes kind sense.
Of person. So I guess I kind of make up for it with the alcohol that I do drink is still very Irish.
Yeah. It must be the... See, because I'm a rum guy, so it must be because I'm Jamaican. So,
or you're a pirate.
Or I'm a pirate. Yeah, I look just like Johnny Depp. People tell me that. So
all the time.
Got some trivia questions for this show. Really easy one, but you know, I felt like you know our questions have been fairly hard, and probably you're researching them if you want to, if you need the answer. So, really easy one for me. Dirty Dancing won an Oscar, and what was the Oscar for? Got to get specific. Can't just say won this Oscar. So that's my question,
right.
And we're nice. Gonna do that. That one will actually be next episode.
We're doing that one next episode.
Yeah.
Cool.
And you have a good one.
Okay, for mine, this is from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. The mothership that you see towards the end of the film was actually designed by which artist?
Ooh, tough
and
one.
This one's very cool. So this will be something that you'll find out at the end of the show today.
Yeah, and so real hard one because I would have never guessed. You know?
No, you know what? And it's cool because this particular artist I was familiar with, but I feel like a lot of people aren't. So it's going to be really cool to see if anybody knows this before we get to it.
Absolutely. All right, coming soon to a theater near you.
Coming soon to a theater near you.
Okay, awesome. I will kickstart this mother. First off, I talked a few episodes back about wanting to see The Purge. I got to see it and obviously used my Fandango bucks to go and see that. It was awesome. Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
I was expecting it to be a little scarier. I don't know where I got that idea because I know it was a thriller. But,
right.
You know, great movie, really awesome acting. It had a ton of twists, as you kind of would expect. And the funny thing was, you know, my wife Sarah and I had a bunch of conversations about not necessarily like, would this work? But it gives you that whole like, is there something like, what would you do during The Purge? Like if you had... If you had, it was 12 hours. So 12 hours where all crime was legal. Like, what kind of person would you be? Would you be like a lock yourself in and like bolt the doors? Or would you be a go out and do some craziness? And, you know, we both highly agreed. We were like the lock ourselves in and just like sit against a wall with a shotgun. Just like.
Right. And it's tough because, you know, me, I like trouble, you know what I mean? So it's like, there's the part of me that's like, oh yeah, I would definitely love to like go out and, you know, wreak some havoc. But at the same time, there's like the adult in me that's kind of like, all right, man, you're 30. you need to friggin' settle down a little bit. You know that, and I mean, you know my wife, she's definitely a hide under the bed, not even with a shotgun because she's afraid of guns. So for her, she's just hide under the bed, clutch the dog, maybe like a Winnie the Pooh. You know, something like that. Put on like a really happy movie and try to pretend like whatever horrible things are happening outside aren't actually happening.
Okay, so maybe it was Sarah that said she wanted to hold the shotgun and I was the one that wanted to hold like the Snoopy doll or something. I don't know.
There you go. That sounds pretty accurate.
Yeah.
I would say you're kind of a puss.
I mean, yeah, true. I mean, the thing to keep in mind too is that, you know, I have no problem. Like, I speak my mind and I have no problem pissing people off. And I'd spend all year being afraid that I was going to piss somebody off and then they were going to find me during The Purge and just shoot me. Like, I had an issue with a neighbor. A tiny little issue, but, you know, I'd be afraid that, like, you know, The Purge would come and he'd just come over here and, like, blow up my apartment or something, you know? So.
Wasn't it the apartment in Baldwinsville that had like the dude with like a hook hand or something and he was always on his balcony like petting a dog with it?
Oh yeah, no, it was Liverpool. It was Liverpool that he had.
It was the Liverpool. Okay, yeah, he had like a hook hand and he was always on the balcony petting a dog. That's the guy that you would imagine would be the dude that just off somebody.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the hook hand, it was the way that he presented himself was creepy as hell.
Exactly. Yeah, you can have a hook hand, like I think that's kind of, you know, Captain Hook or whatever.
Captain Hook.
Good
bro,
for you,
Captain
man.
Hook.
But like if you're that and you're a creepy asshole, like come on. That's not cool. I'm not into that.
Was that the same apartment complex that like there was a dead body found?
No. That was in the one after that. See, as you can tell if you're listening to the show, I have really great luck with apartments. we had a creepy hook hand guy that would constantly, like, you know, make really creepy motions at my wife when I wasn't around. And, like, then in the following apartment, I had an elderly man murdered his wife in the apartment across from us. And not only did he murder her, but he stayed for, like, a week while her dead body was rotting in there. And he talked to my wife when I was gone. He talked to me. And, like, he invited us over to come into the apartment and, quote, unquote, buy some of his stuff while she was dead in there. Ugh. That's so twisted. Ugh.
Dude, that's like that's a movie right there.
It's a movie.
Like somebody can go ahead and just make a movie about that creepy shit.
And he had killed before. Like he murdered a priest in New York City, did
what?
Like 30 years in jail, and then they let him out, and then he killed his wife.
Awesome. Wow, this is a great movie. Kind of
it should be a movie. But
all right, Edward Norton, get on that.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, for sure. All right, so the next thing, and this is, everybody's been talking about this, so this is going to be a little old hat, but I don't really give a crap. We got Ben Affleck as Batman.
The Batfleck, yay!
Yeah,
Batfleck. And I'll put in my two cents quick. Okay, first, I laughed. I was literally like, really, Daredevil is Batman? That's a wonderful choice.
Great connection.
It's like, come on, man, we still have not forgotten Daredevil. So it's like, really, you haven't been forgiven for that one. And he even said, when they initially were like, oh, you know, maybe we will do a sequel. And first out, he was initially interested in returning for a sequel, but he wanted to do like a darker version. He wanted to do something along the lines of Born Again, which was like a very dark, almost Batman-esque version of Daredevil. But then I guess as time went on, he was kind of like, you know what? I've ruined my chances of being a superhero because this movie was so bad. And it wasn't just that it was his acting, because his acting wasn't that bad. It was the story was terrible. Like, the script was bad. The movie just wasn't shot well. There were too many characters. It was just too convoluted, too confusing. It just didn't work. So I understand him as Batman because, yes, it's another dark character. Obviously, he's shown in Argo and The Town that he is a phenomenal actor. He's a phenomenal director. Just, you know, he has really grown, and we've kind of forgotten about Geely, so we're not going to, you know, we're not going to really hold that against him. So, you know, I've grown to really be excited about him as Batman. I do think he's going to do a great job with this, provided that the script is amicable to what they're trying to do. I still think that introducing a new Batman in a Superman movie is a bad idea. I will still hold true to that, and I hope that they prove me wrong. But I do think that bringing in somebody as talented as Ben Affleck is a good choice.
I'm nervous, and I'm nervous not necessarily because of Ben Affleck. I think it really comes down to how he decides to play Batman. Like, we kind of hit on this on the last episode, was like, it all depends on how you play. Like, George Clooney, horrible Batman.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's how he played it. I think George Clooney is a great actor. I'm a fan of George Clooney. But I think as Batman, like, he can't get into the role. He can't connect with the role. And I think there's some darkness to Ben Affleck, too, that has not necessarily yet to be seen, but, like, yet to be seen in a really big way.
Right.
So I think he can do it, but I don't want it to be here's the, like, the goofy, fun-loving Batman. I want it to be like continuing the dark, serious Batman, and it could possibly make me hate Superman slightly less, but I doubt it. So
I don't think there's a lot that can make me hate Superman less than I already do. So.
Right, right. And I, you know, sometimes the Versus movies are good, sometimes they're bad. You know, like Alien vs. Predator, okay. You know, pretty solid. You got Freddy versus Jason, decent, kind of corny.
Decent.
I was pissed when Jason won, spoiler alert.
Because
that's stupid.
You probably should have said that before, but whatever.
Yeah, that's okay. That movie is like 10 years old now, so we'll,
that's true. And it's not a must see either.
No,
but see, here's my thing is that with both of those examples, the movie was only really good because it was something you wanted to see. You wanted to see Aliens versus Predator, so it didn't matter if it was really that great of a movie. You just wanted to see them face off.
Right.
Same thing with what was the other one you just said? Man, I'm getting old.
Freddy versus Jason.
Freddy versus Jason. Yeah, it's in one of those things where it's like, wow, that's a really cool idea, and then you watch it and you're like, maybe not as cool as we thought.
Yeah.
So I think with Superman versus Batman, it's one of those things that everybody has wanted to see because you've seen it in the comic books. So it'd be great to see it on the big screen. But I think once we see it, we might be like, I could have done without that one. So yet again, I said I'm happy to be proven wrong on this one, but I do think that the a new Batman being introduced in a Superman movie is a bad idea. And especially, I don't know if you've seen The Hobbit, the new one that just came out.
I have not, and I'm not caught up yet on the Lord of the Rings in general.
Oh, okay. Well, in in The Hobbit, there's an actor. His name is Richard Armitage. He's a British actor. He's done a TV series called MI5. He was also in the Captain America movie as the guy that kind of blows up the chamber that Captain America gets turned into Captain America in.
Okay.
And he kind of runs off, and Captain America chases him. It's Richard Armitage, and he played Thorin Oakenshield in the new Hobbit movie, and he was phenomenal. Piercing blue eyes, just commanding presence, and he was one of the ones they were considering for Batman. And obviously, you know, Ben Affleck won the role, but he was the one that, after our last episode, I found out that he was in contention, and I was actually really pushing for him.
Nice.
But unfortunately, they didn't go with him.
And, and here's the last thing I'll say about Ben Affleck is that...
The Batfleck.
He genuinely, like, he really gives a crap. Like, he's a comic book fan. And, so that'll lend, I think, some kind of... he'll be genuine with the role. That's what I think. Is he's I think he'll do it the way we want it to. I'm not sure yet, and I think I'm not ready for a Batman movie now that I'm not gonna love. That's really what it comes down to, because it's been a long time since I haven't loved a Batman, and they've only stepped up. I mean, I still think Dark Knight is the best, but you know, they man, if they took a step down, it would really disappoint me. So the next movie, this one I'm really pumped about. And again, I was trailer diving in this one. So nice. Lone Survivor. Have you seen the preview for that?
You know, my wife was watching one, but I was kind of, I was busy farting around on my phone. So I wasn't, I was kind of haphazardly paying attention to it, but it did seem pretty interesting because I kind of tuned in halfway through the trailer.
Okay. So I get the Saving Private Ryan of like 2013 in this.
That's
the feeling I get. It's based on the failed June 28, 2005 mission, Operation Red Wings. It's four. That cracked me up. But it's four members of Navy SEAL Team 10. And their whole thing was they were trying to kill a Taliban leader. And there was only one guy that survived. And it's got
pretty crazy.
Oh, yeah. And it's got Mark Wahlberg. And it's like the trailer is friggin' killer, which is anytime there's a good trailer, I want to see the movie because I'm just a trailer geek, and then the movie disappoints. But, you know, Marky Mark, can't see him disappointing. So I think it looks like it's going to be a really good one. And there's like, it's going to be one of those quotable movies that people use like Braveheart. Like people use the quotes from the movies to show how strong they are and to bring their team together. I see that happening right now. So
nice. Very
and
cool.
Then this next one that I'm just really excited about, the trailer, like, man, I watched it like four times. I had my wife, my pregnant wife, she's 4 weeks away from having a baby. And I had her walk all the way from one end of the apartment to the other to come watch the trailer. That's how nuts of a husband I am. It's The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. It's Ben Stiller, Kristen Wiig, Adam Scott, Sean Penn, Shirley MacLaine, Patton Oswalt. I mean, come on. I could just say that and you'd know it's going to be a good movie.
I remember watching the trailer for that. I think they showed a trailer for that when we were in, when we went and saw World's End. And the same thing, when I watched that trailer, I was just like, this is going to be a phenomenal movie, not just because of the cast, but the movie seems amazing.
Seriously, yeah. If you haven't heard of it or seen the trailer, go see it. But it's the main character, which is Ben Stiller. He works at a magazine. It's supposed to be Time Magazine, but they call it Life Magazine. He lives like this really boring life where, you know, he doesn't really do anything energetic, and he's kind of like a pussy. And he always has these imaginary stories that he goes on, like these adventures, and there's a girl that he likes, and he's like looking at her, and he imagines whisking her off to some crazy world. And then one day he decides he's done imagining it, and he's just going to go do them. So the thing that hooked me right away was the cinematography.
When it looks like he's like on the Swiss Alps or something, it's like that snow scene. You're just like, this is breathtaking. It looks so beautiful.
Yep, that kind of stuff. I don't know what it is lately. I've just really been hooked on like super good cinematography. Even with my business, the Awesome Clarity business, everything that I'm doing, when I do a video, like I can't use a video that I make because I don't have a camera that good. I don't have like a filmmaker. Yep. I need to hire like a full-time filmmaking team to be able to do anything, because I see stuff like this and I'm like, oh my God, I would watch that just because of the cinematography. The story sounds amazing, and I just love that whole idea of like just going on an adventure and like leaving the stupid crap behind. I can't wait to see it. So you saw World's End, huh?
I did. I got to see it. We were down in Disney for my wife's birthday, and we had some time to kill, And we were walking through downtown Disney, and there's a really nice theater over there. So I was kind of like, hey, would you like to go see a movie? Do you want to go see a movie? And so we went over to the theater kind of just to see what was playing, and it was kind of a toss-up between Kick-Ass 2 World's End. So we flipped a coin, and it happened to be World's End, so we went. And it was one of those, legitimately, we both laughed audibly out in the theater. Like, we were just sitting in our chairs just laughing because it was just that funny. You know, it was every bit as, to me at least, it was every bit as awesome as Hot Fuzz or Shaun of the Dead. And I really thought that it was cool because in the previous two movies, Simon Pegg kind of plays the hero, whereas this one, he's kind of an anti-hero.
Oh, nice.
Which I thought was really cool because they kind of flipped it, so it's not like they tried to do just the same thing over and over again. And, you know, where he's kind of, you know, in Hot Fuzz, he was kind of like the showman with all the fighting and whatnot. And this time it was actually Nick Frost was like the brawler.
Oh, really?
And like when there was a fight sequence, he was the one that was just kicking ass the whole time. And it was really cool that they decided to flip things, that they were like, let's not make that same movie again and again. And, you know, it had its emotional touches, and it was, you know, I think it was just really easy to get into. You know, there wasn't a point in the movie you were just like, oh, come on, is this, you know, really still dragging? Like, it really was just interesting from start to finish for me. So it lived up to the hype. So for me, two thumbs way, way up.
I'll give it a shot maybe when it's on Netflix.
Yeah, you might like it. You might like this one.
And what else you got? So any that you're like pumped about?
Okay, well, I watched a lot of movies since we did the last episode. Finally saw Star Trek Into Darkness.
Oh, yeah. Was it good?
Super amazing. Really, really liked it. Kind of wish I had seen it in the theater instead of at home.
Yep.
Just because I feel like it would have been as big as when you and I watched the first one in theaters. Good. I think we were actually, no joke, dude, I think we watched it in Fresno.
I think we did, actually, yeah.
I'm pretty sure because it was so hot that we were like, man, I just want to sit in air conditioning and the van is going to waste gas. So I think we went and watched it in the Fresno Theater. So that's always been kind of something that's been in the back of my mind that's funny. But I saw that one. Really, really good. Loved it. I also watched We're the Millers. It was good. It's definitely a you movie. So if you get a chance, you definitely need to watch it because it's right up your
alley. So was it funny?
It was super funny. Like, I even laughed. Like, it was really that funny. Jason Sudeikis is great.
Always.
The actor and the actress that play the fake kids in the movie are both hilarious. And the boy is actually British, which he does a great American. Like, I never would have pegged him as a British actor. So that was really cool.
There's a lot of that going around. I don't understand it, but it's awesome.
People don't know that Christian Bale is British because they just see him in Batman or like American Psycho. And they're just like, oh yeah, he's American. No, he's not. He's British. And I loved that. And you know me, I'm not a big Jennifer Aniston fan. And the fact that she was a stripper, I didn't find her convincing. As a stripper, she was great. Like, she was funny. She was very abrasive, which I thought was cool because it was a change up for her typical character.
That's entirely different.
But her as a stripper, it looked like Jennifer Aniston trying to be a stripper, or like Rachel from Friends trying to be a stripper. So it was just awkward. It really wasn't sexy for me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's what they were going for or if it's just because I'm a terrible person. So it just didn't really go for me. So I mean, you know, you got to figure you're a Jennifer Aniston fan, so you'll probably like it. For me, I'm more of an Angelina Jolie fan. So, you know, you married a nice kind of girl next door, very pretty. I married a psycho. So, I mean, it kind of fits, you know.
Brittany, he doesn't really feel that way. She's not going to listen to this. She's going to listen to you talk all the time anyway.
She's going to punch me in the back of the head while I'm not looking.
What else? What do we got? What else? What's coming up?
So there's a movie called Ender's Game, which is based on a young adult book series, which you know, has been just number one bestseller, similar to like how Hunger Games kind of just hit it really big. So
was that the Harry Potter talk that we had?
Yeah, you know, where it was like these books that come out and then they almost immediately want to make them into movies because the books have such a quick and explosive fan base. So Ender's Game seems to be that same sort of way where the big catch for me is that Harrison Ford is in it and he's playing it's a sci-fi movie set in the future and he is kind of like a general, if you will. So it's very much the way that he will probably portray Han Solo in the new Star Wars movies. So I'm excited to go and see him play a sci-fi role and kind of get a good feel for what he will bring to the new trilogy. So I'm excited for Ender's Game. It seems like it's a kid that is a genius with tactical abilities. So he's able to kind of see a battle and predict the best way to get a victory. It's kind of like a chess master,
okay,
sort of deal. So, but obviously with actual people and starships and whatnot. So you know me, a big sci-fi dork. So it's right up my alley.
Right.
So Ender's Game, that looks really good. And I'm with you on this movie, Prisoners. It's just that one just is going to be a phenomenal movie.
Oh yeah, we have for these episodes, since we're both idiots and we'll never finish an episode if we don't do this, we have like a guide for how we're going to get from, you know, from the beginning of the episode to the end without it being like a 12-hour podcast episode. And I didn't even look at Liam's side of anything. And earlier I was watching trailers and I texted him. I said, dude, have you seen the preview for Prisoners? This movie looks just unbelievable. You know, like, okay, Hugh Jackman, always amazing.
Always great. And then Jake Gyllenhaal, which... he's grown on me since Donnie Darko.
Yep.
So, I mean, he's definitely, he's always honing his craft, and each movie he does seems to be better than the last one. So he looks phenomenal as Detective Loki in this one.
So weird.
So that looks good. Terrence Howard, I'm not usually a big fan of him, but he actually looks good in this one. I like him more as a villain than as a hero, but he kind of looks like he's just sort of the sidekick, like the friend to Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, and who's the Paul Dano? That's the guy. Okay. Or Dano, or however the heck you say his name. He's in like Little Miss Sunshine, which that's a great movie. Looper. If I'm remembering right, he's like the villain in Looper as well. So yeah, that's just like, that's a good movie. You have to see that if you haven't seen that. Looper, wicked good movie. And I mean Bruce Willis, come on.
Oh yeah. Well, that and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, another phenomenal.
Always
actor.
Good. Always good. Every movie ever. All right, moving on.
And now our feature presentation.
Awesome. So my movie was Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And, you know, it's an older movie, older than me, I believe.
1977, my friend.
Yeah. So older than me, which is great. I don't often get to see movies that are older than I am.
Same year as Star Wars, A New Hope.
I like it. And that is, all right, well, we'll talk about that another day. Again, that's next episode. So Close Encounter, my thoughts going into this movie. Well, I've wanted to see it for a long time. And the thing that actually rekindled my desire to see this movie was I love Seen It. Like, I have every Seen It pretty much ever, except for there's a sports one. I don't have the sports one, which really nerdifies me that I don't have. That's the only one I don't have.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. but yeah, so I was watching and there was a scene from Close Encounters of the Third Kind and I didn't know what it was. It was the part where he's in the truck and everything's shaking, like everything goes crazy and all the stuff on his dash goes flying in his lap.
Right.
That's in Seen It. And I was going, man, I don't know what this is, but I want to watch this. And then when they said the answer, so that's where that came from. Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And my thoughts, I'm mixed, because I think if I had not gone into it going, this was a world-changing kind of movie, like this is the movie you have to see, I probably would have been like, man, that was awesome. But my feelings on it now are, well, that was a good movie, and I'm glad that I watched it.
And I think it's tough because you've seen, what was it, The Fourth Kind or whatever?
Yes.
Was that? And that film was more of a thriller, you know what I mean? Whereas for this one, this was just Steven Spielberg wanting to make a sci-fi movie. You know what I mean? So it was one of those things where he wanted a sci-fi movie. People brought him scripts. This was the one that he liked. And it was just one of those things that, you know, that he was able to make. So it was at the time in 1977, this was an awe-inspiring movie. This was one of those movies that people went and saw and was just like, wow, I can't believe, you know, somebody could think of all this stuff. You know, it was a very big movie, kind of the same way that Jaws was. You know what I mean? That it was just one of those movies that... You know, a movie about shark attacks. Oh, God, how did nobody think about this? You know, and it kind of flipped the world on its side. But in 1977, watching it in 2013, you kind of go back and you're like, yeah, it's definitely a movie in the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, and it's true. Like, The Fourth Kind, to me, scared me like no other. And it might have been the situation with which I watched the movie. But either way, that, you know, The Fourth Kind was incredible. And that is definitely my favorite Alien movie. And that's including Alien and Aliens and all the different Alien movies.
Wow, crazy.
The Fourth Kind, it was just like, it felt to me like, it felt more like something that could actually happen, as weird as that sounds. Now, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, there were a lot of things that I really loved. I mean, Richard Dreyfuss was amazing.
Of course.
The scene where he's going crazy and he's throwing all the stuff in the window.
Right.
I was dying. Because even now, that's so twisted, and I still don't quite understand like what was going on, other than the fact that he was just losing it. And, you know, everything that was going on, that was so amazing to me. And the minute he started throwing stuff inside, first off, I started laughing. And then I was like, oh, my God, like this guy's losing his cool.
Yeah, he's flipping out. And you had to figure that because he became obsessed. Like, that was the kind of underlying focus of this, because he becomes literally obsessed with the ideas of UFOs and just like the increasing activity and just what it means to him. And I mean, you know. For those that have or have not seen the movie, you become so absorbed into one thing that you start to ignore the rest of the world around you, you know, like his wife and, you know, just the other, you know, responsibilities that he had.
Yeah. And that's one thing that did seem real about it to me, is that something like that happens to you, like you see something crazy like that, and you're bound to have some level of obsession. Like, I know if I saw that and I saw it crystal clear like he did, I'd be like, well, we should probably figure this out.
Right.
And the fact is, like, everybody around him was going crazy about it too. It just seemed like his family was just like, okay, you saw a UFO, or you think you did, like, get over it. And but it was all over the news, and a bajillion other people saw it. And his family's just, like, abandoned him. It blew my mind. And I see why he would go crazy.
Right.
But the other thing that I really liked that was, I'm going to say, maybe my favorite part of the movie, which is weird, is when at the very end, when the mothership is down. I won't give anything away in case anybody hasn't seen it. But the mothership is down, and they show, like, I think is the main alien, whatever. The one with the super long, skinny arms and legs.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the coolest looking alien I've ever seen.
And that's what I think a lot of people enjoyed about the film, is that they made everything seem realistic. You know what I mean? Like, it was sci-fi, obviously, you know, everybody knew it was a sci-fi movie and whatnot, but they made, you know, the mothership, the encounters, just everything seemed like it was based on stuff that had already happened. You know what I mean? Everybody watched it just thinking, wow, this probably happened, or this is from somebody's story, like, hey, this is what happened to me, you know? And I think that was what fascinated people, you
Absolutely.
Know, from 1977 till now. Because people still, obviously, just like you just watched this movie, but people still view this movie as a classic, you know? People still want to watch this film.
And I think it's a classic. There's no doubt in my mind it's a classic. It's just, for me, it's just not a movie that, like, if it was on TV, I wouldn't be like, oh my God, Close Encounters is on, you know?
Right.
I would be like, all right, well, yeah, this I can watch this now. It looks like a good movie to watch. So the alien at the end just reminds me so much of when the guy, like, all his stuff goes crazy, the demon in Legion.
Oh yeah.
You know, like when he's outside the diner or whatever, it's the first demon that pulls up and he just stretches out and everything. Reminds me so much of that. And there's so many good memories with that movie, so you know. That might be it.
Yeah, the fact that we paid like $1.50 each to go and view it, and we still were like, man, I kind of want my money back.
Oh,
like,
man. We were in a theater, in a dollar theater, laughing hysterically at Legion. And the people around us at first were, I think they were kind of pissed. And then probably 10 minutes later, we had the whole theater laughing with us.
Oh, yeah. Because I feel like movies like that, you kind of, you go into the film like, I got to be respectful. This is somebody's, you know, art. Like, I'm going to be quiet and be respectful. But there are some movies that you're just like, this is atrocious. There is no way that anybody is honestly sitting in this theater enjoying this film. And so I think when we just started laughing at the ridiculousness of it, it sort of spread. And everybody else was like, okay, I guess it's okay for us to laugh too.
The instructions.
The instructions. This guy's name is Jeep. Wait, I'm sorry. His name is Jeep? Like, J-E-E-P? Yeah, okay. That's that. I'm clocked out at this point.
I apologize to anybody listening to the show whose name is Jeep.
No, I'm not, because your parents just hate you. There's no two ways around that one. That's like naming your kid Lemangelo or something.
Oh,
like,
boy.
Lemon Jello, man. Just nobody likes
Lemon
you.
Jello. So Close Encounters of the Third Kind for me. I give it like one thumb up and then one hand doing the kind of thing. So I would say, it's a movie to see before you die if you really love movies and you want to be like the guy that has seen every movie. Otherwise, it's a movie that you should see sometime if you want to see a pretty good movie.
Cool. I agree. I think that's a pretty fair assessment.
Sick. And you had Dirty Dancing, buddy. What'd you think?
Oh, man. Okay, so going into it, going into Dirty Dancing, we'll start there. I was kind of like, oh, God, what have I gotten myself into? Like, this is gonna be corny. This is going to be just one of those films that everybody was like, oh, it's so great, but it's because they grew up with it, and I'm just going to watch it playing on my cell phone the whole time, just trying to, like, struggle my way through this film. So, I already knew a good bit about it because obviously, you know, everybody loves Swayze. There's no way around Swayze, yep. Man. He was just, you know, God rest him, but he was just awesome. Like, I always loved Swayze. You know, I knew, obviously it was more of a dance film than anything else. And I knew the line, nobody puts baby in the corner because, you know, Fall Out Boy obviously has the song titled Nobody Puts Baby in the Corner, and then obviously from Family Guy, where he walks up and he's like, nobody puts baby in the corner, and then the dad's like, aren't you in your, like, 30s? My daughter's 16. Why don't you leave her alone? Like, great, you know, which is funny, too, because Swayze was, I think, 34 when he did the film, and Jennifer Grey was, like, 26, so he actually was, like, in his 30s, but Jennifer Grey was not as young as she was portrayed. On the
well,
film.
She pulled off the younger girl thing really well. And the two of them together, I mean, he could have been her dad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, going into it, I thought he was going to be more of like a mentor, big brother kind of thing. I didn't know it was going to be like a romance, like they're going to fall in love. And at first, I was a little bit creeped. I was a little bit like, oh, okay, I don't know about this.
One of the most well-known romantic movies of all time, and it creeped you out. That's why
exactly.
You're my best friend.
There you go. This is why we get along. But, okay, on the positive sides for this movie, okay, I loved that it was, you know, 1987 film set in 1963. I loved that it was an 80s movie not set in the 80s. That it was, they were like, you know what, let's do a movie about the 60s. And they did it with that kind of voracious sexual drive that, you know, people in the 60s, you just think of the hippies, but you don't really think of, like, you know, what this was. It was like almost an underground dance crew. You know what I mean? It was very, very cool.
It was, I love that it was cool that it was like, I love that it, I just, I don't know, I think it was cool that like dancing is a cool thing.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? And that... You know, when you think about, I don't know for you, but I know when, you know, when I went through high school, like a guy knowing how to dance was, you know, everyone was like, okay, bleh, you know, and it was, stupid because, you know, I was an Irish step dancer. So I did Irish dancing for years, had to dress up in a kilt. You know what I mean? I was on St. Patrick's Day Parade, all those little kid TV shows.
Fake dancing with a skirt.
Exactly.
On.
And, you know, I got the short end of that one. You know what I mean? Like girls knowing how to dance, everybody's like, yeah, you're a girl. You better know how to dance. But for dudes, like, it was definitely a rough thing to have to go through. And I, you know, I was not interested in pursuing any sort of dance career or any ambition to be a better dancer because I was more, you know, at that time, you're more important to be popular, you know, to be liked among your friends. So it kind of bums me out because I feel like now there is a huge focus on guys being able to dance. You look at any of the top 40 pop artists, they can all dance. You know what I mean? And girls love it. Like, look at that Magic Mike movie. Girls went freaking bonkers about seeing male strippers. And I'm like, dude, there's been male strippers around forever, but you guys are just now pretending like you just figured it out. Ooh, Chippendales, you're an idiot. So,
yeah, but that's just because it's, you know, Channing Tatum.
Exactly, that and Matthew McConaughey. But I loved that this guy, like Patrick Swayze, he's the king. You know what I mean? Like, everybody respects him. Everybody's just like, this guy is legit. You know, they all look up to him. And I like that. I like that he had that kind of, he was still rock and roll, but he was like a ballet dancer. You know, like the way that he could, you know, compose himself, the way that he moved, it was phenomenal. And I loved the fact that Kenny Ortega, who was the choreographer for the film, actually trained under Gene Kelly. And
really?
And I think that that's just one of those, you know, you just, when you know that fact and you go back and you really watch their moves, you're just like, oh, absolutely. You know, there's no way that
it makes sense.
There wasn't that sort of influence. And that brings back that 40s influence, you know, and how dancing was respected. You know, people looked at a guy that could dance, was like, you know, this is great. I'm sure there were obviously some guys who were like, yeah, you're fairy, you know what I mean? But it was in terms of popular culture, people respected it. And I loved that this was kind of an homage to that era, you know, to like that thought process. So I did thoroughly enjoy that fact. you know, dance scenes were great. I actually thought the acting was really good. I loved the chemistry that they had between Baby and Johnny. You know, that it was, you know, obviously, yeah, at first I was a little creeped out from the age difference. But as they kind of went along and he became less of she didn't idolize him as much. And it really became almost like a very candid love, which I thought was really, really innocent. And it was very honest. And I enjoyed that. But I do think that the underlying themes like abortion, you know, being kind of ostracized from your family, you know, I thought those sort of themes were very important. And I felt like they kind of didn't focus on those as much as they probably could have.
Was actually my complaint with it, is that there was serious stuff that they really could have gone into, and they kind of avoided it, which is still, I mean, it's okay because I think it would have been an entirely different movie, but I definitely agree. Like there were a couple of things that were like, this could have been huge and it wasn't necessarily. So I have to agree with that.
But I think we also have to remember that in the late 80s, they really weren't talking about abortion. And obviously in the 60s, that was very much a, you know, don't ask, don't tell kind of mentality. So I understood why, but I did kind of wish that they focused more on the social issues more than just, oh, this girl's learning how to dance from an older guy, you know.
Right.
Oh, how racy. Oh, my gosh. So I mean, I think all in all, I thought the movie was, I thought the dance sequences were phenomenal. I liked the chemistry between the two of them, which I guess, incidentally, initially they didn't get along because they were both in the original Red Dawn, and they didn't get along on that set. So when they were both cast to do this one, they had to do like a test, like a screen test of them dancing together, and their dance chemistry was phenomenal, but their personal chemistry was not good. So they actually made them sit down a couple weeks into filming and rewatch their dancing chemistry so that they could kind of rekindle that, because they started like arguing on set, like they were not getting along at all. So it was really, a lot of the times when you see him being frustrated with her, it's honest. He actually is frustrated with her.
It kind of makes sense. And that was the point in the movie where I was really, and I remember because, you know, I just remember certain movies. And I think like that was the point where I remember being like, you know, I really like this movie, when he was trying to teach her to dance.
Yeah. And he does like the kind of caress down her arm, and when he would get to her ribs and she would laugh every time. And that's honest. They did several takes of that, and then the director just did the cuts, and he just put it together, because you're like, this is the most honest acting you're going to really see, like, because he's really frustrated with her, and she's really laughing because it's tickling.
Right, makes sense. So your final review then?
Final review, I say that this is a movie that you should definitely see, because it is a classic, and if you are a fan of dancing at all, this is definitely a movie to watch, because it makes you wish that you were a better dancer.
Nice. So you weren't miserable. You actually enjoyed the movie.
No, I actually enjoyed the movie. I probably won't watch it again anytime soon, but I am glad that I have it so I can watch it.
There you have it. There's Close Encounters of the Third Kind and Dirty Dancing.
The Director's Cut.
So in this director's cut, we have a few things. Liam's got a bunch more than I do, so I'll let you take over.
All right. So the big thing with Close Encounters, which I'm with you on that one, when you said that Richard Dreyfuss was just a perfect pick as the role, and he really just kind of brought that character to life, which I loved that they went with him, because the other people they were initially looking at was actually Steve McQueen was Spielberg's first choice for the role. And I don't know how familiar you are with Steve McQueen. He did The Great Escape, Bullet. He's done a bunch of really great movies. He's very much an action star, if you will, for the time. But McQueen actually, he was impressed with the script, but he felt he wasn't specifically right for the role because he was unable to cry on cue.
That's so strange.
I feel like that's such a minute thing, but I guess he felt that was very important to the role. So he was just like, I have to turn it down. I can't cry on cue. So they had actually gone after Dustin Hoffman, who turned it down, Al Pacino, and Gene Hackman. And then Jack Nicholson.
Right.
I know. And then Jack Nicholson turned it down because of scheduling conflicts. So it was because when Spielberg was filming Jaws, Dreyfuss kept bugging him into casting him as the role of Roy. So he like listened to 155 days worth of Close Encounters, contributed ideas, and he really like, you know, Dreyfuss launched himself into like a campaign to try to get this role. And finally it got to the point that Steven Spielberg was just annoyed and he was like, fine, fine, you can have it.
Well, it worked out well. I mean, I could see some of those other people playing Roy Neary, but I think the way that Richard Dreyfuss played it was just like, it was perfect. The insanity wasn't, like, you wouldn't see him in a mental institution and be like, this is the most insane guy in here. But it was just like, it was a guy on the brink. And I love that. And he played that so well. Like, Jack Nicholson plays the crazy guy that you're like, you need to be like, you know, straitjacket in the corner, kind of crazy. And I think that would have been a weird role. And Steve McQueen would have been good too. But again, really actiony. I think Richard Dreyfuss was right.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like it's one of those things that I'm sure in hindsight they look back and I'm sure Spielberg's like, wow, I'm really glad that he, you know, bugged me as much as he did to try to get this role.
Absolutely. Now, are you a Ferris Bueller's Day Off fan?
This is one of those movies that I've seen probably like twice in my entire life, and it's one of those movies that you watch and you're like, this is pretty good, but it's another one of those 80s films that you're kind of like, I'm glad I've seen it, but it's not a movie that I'm going to watch all the time. I'm the same way for Say Anything, which I know people will kill me for because that's everybody's favorite movie.
Yeah.
But for me, it's one of those, I've seen it, don't really need to see it again.
Interesting. Okay, well, I'm a Bueller fan.
I know you are. You love Ferris Bueller.
You know what? It's funny. I'm not a big Matthew Broderick fan. I wouldn't say I'm indifferent, but I'm very one-sided one way or another. Like, I either love him or hate him, and I loved him in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And the reason I bring it up is because at the time of filming Dirty Dancing, Jennifer Grey only had, like, the only reason anybody knew who she was Matthew Broderick's pain in the ass sister in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And it's funny because it must have been really hard to play that role, because when she was doing that movie, she was dating Matthew Broderick.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like in Dexter, where Michael C. Hale is, not anymore, but he was married to the Jennifer Carpenter, the girl that plays his sister on the show.
Michael C. Hall.
There you go. Thank you. Yeah. So it's one of those things where you're just like, oh, wow, they're brother, or they're married, but they have to play brother and sister.
I actually didn't know that. I did not know that at all.
Oh, you didn't?
Nope.
Oh, yeah. No, they're not married anymore, but during probably the first four or five seasons, they were married.
Man.
So it was very weird that they were playing brother and sister. And in the show, they both have a lot of sex scenes with other people. So it's kind of like, how awkward must that be to be like, well, I'm not going to be on set this day because my husband's going to have a sex scene with somebody.
That is, by the way, one of the best shows on TV.
I haven't seen like the last two seasons, so I definitely have to catch up because that's a
great
show.
I'm very far behind on this season. Like, really far behind. And I mean, the last season before the one that's on now, and this is our podcast is current enough, was awesome. And
was it?
It was my favorite yet. And so this season is, I don't know, I'm loving it so far, but I'm not deep into it. So it's starting to get weird. Like, did you ever watch Weeds?
I only watched the couple episodes that you had me watch because you were like super into it. So I watched a couple episodes, but not enough to really like,
yeah,
get a feel for it other than they sell weed and buy weed and do a lot of stuff with weed.
The thing with Weeds is like the first, and we're talking about TV shows, but I don't care, it's nerdy enough. The first several seasons of Weeds was awesome. Like, it was an incredible show, connected with the characters, and then it just started to get so weird that it lost its appeal. And I was kind of afraid that that's going to happen to Dexter, and it hasn't yet, but I'm getting that feeling that, like, oh, it's going to slowly get there. So anyway, that's a really good connection, like the Jennifer Grey, Matthew Broderick dating. I don't know how somebody could do anything like that.
You know what's cool, too, is I'm with you on Matthew Broderick. I've never been, like, I would never consider myself a fan of his until I saw him on Broadway with Nathan Lane doing The Producers.
Oh, my God,
blew my mind how phenomenal he is on stage, and it's one of those things where it's a different venue, if you will. So it's so honest, and he was so phenomenal. And Nathan Lane's always amazing. So, just the two of them together just blew my mind. It's probably my favorite Broadway play that I've ever seen, probably even better than Wicked. And I saw Wicked with Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel.
Dang.
So, like, the original cast. So it's one of those. I was fortunate to be able to see these on Broadway with the originals. So
nice, Nice. And so we'll do one more TV thing here real quick because we're on the path. Who gives a crap? It's our show. We do what we want. Okay, brother.
okay, brother.
So How I Met Your Mother.
Just Muscle Milk on the side of my mouth.
How I've been, you know, guzzling Muscle Milk and watching How I Met Your Mother. Are you caught up?
Go. No, I haven't seen any of the current season.
Good dear sweet Lord.
You know why, though? It's one of those things where with my work schedule... Uh-huh. That I almost can never catch the episode when it comes on. And then for some reason, out here at least, they never freaking show repeats of this season. I can watch any episode from any of the old seasons, and they air them constantly, like in four episodes in a row block. But they will not show anything from the current season or the last season.
Okay, so
it's really annoying.
Here's your best resource, CBS.com. All right, guys. Ooh, guys in the audience, we are not endorsed, nor do we endorse CBS.com, but... It's a good place to go and watch TV shows. So yeah, How I Met Your Mother, it's on replay like the next day on CBS.com. And here's the thing about How I Met Your Mother. There's an actress on the show. I can't give anything away to you right now. I'm sure you've heard all sorts of crap because, yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a new actress on the show, and you'd probably love her just in the sense of the things that she's done in the past. That's all I can say. You need to watch the new season, and then we need to talk about this.
You know what sucks, though, is I called it, because I've already heard them talking about it, but I called it, and I'm pretty sure you did too. I called exactly who the mother was, like, seasons ago, and I've heard from the rumor mill that who I thought it was is exactly who it turned out to be. So I was like, you know what? Booyah. I figured your show out seasons
ago. I'm
going to
screw your whole world up right now. You're wrong, I think.
No, I'm right. I'm pretty sure
you're wrong because this is... Now, folks, listen. If you're listening to this show right now, this is how you have a conversation with your friend that you care about and you don't want to ruin something that is important, like, you know, How I Met Your Mother and giving away secrets. This is how you handle this. So it's... We've never met her before, dude.
No, it's not that we've like met her as in like it was a full-fledged conversation, but you've seen her on screen before.
No. Nope.
Really?
Really.
Man, then somebody lied to me.
Somebody lied to you. Yeah, no, this is all new. And I thought when I first saw her, this is exactly what I did. I'll bleep this out because I know what I'm going to say. Who the f*** is that? That's exactly what I said, and it's I'm half disappointed and half excited, so we'll leave it at that. I'm gonna let you watch the season, and then in an upcoming episode of our freaking movie podcast, we're gonna talk about a TV show because I just love How I Met Your Mother.
It's just a good show.
It is a great show. We better get going here, though. People are going to be falling asleep here because they're at the end of our show, and they want to know the answer to the trivia question. And I realize I beefed up in the beginning because we're giving the answer to my trivia question today.
Boom.
Which is, what Oscar did Dirty Dancing win? Best music. And, you know, come on. Real obvious. I've Had the Time of My Life was the winning song.
And then all I could think of was in Blue Harvest when... Herbert the pervert sings it to Chris and like he's dancing with the stormtroopers.
Now I had the time of my life.
So the whole time that song's playing, all I'm thinking of is Herbert the pervert. So yeah, there's something wrong with me.
So yeah, this is the last episode of Launch Week. So if you listen to this, chances are you've listened to our first three episodes. Thank you so much. We want to know what you think.
Absolutely.
So go over to our website. There's a contact form on our website and send us an email. Let us know what you think. We would love to hear what kind of movies that you would like. Comment on this episode and get stoked because if you're as much of a nerd as we are, you'll really enjoy that episode 4 of our show is the Star Wars episode.
Oh, yeah.
So get pumped
for
that.
I feel like right there we need to have like the Imperial March playing or something, you know.
I think we could do that. So
nice.
We'll figure it out. If not, you know, I'll just say this.
It'll just be me going.
If we can, I'll just say, you know what, Disney? Suck it. Just kidding. Sponsor us. All right, so let's get out of here, man. Thanks so much. That's all for this episode of I Can't Believe You Haven't Seen That. Now we've seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind and Dirty Dancing. If you haven't yet, check them out or don't at your own risk. As always, links to anything we've mentioned here are available at ICan'tBelieveYouHaven'tSeenThat.com/3. So head over there, leave us a comment to let us know if you love us or hate us. If you want to get our top 10 movies you must see before you're considered lame, Sign up for our mailing list at ICan'tBelieveYouHaven'tSeenThat.com/lame. Make sure you support our sponsor at ICan'tBelieveYouHaven'tSeenThat.com/tickets. Thanks for being here. You stay classy, world.